Good afternoon. Welcome, everybody, to the Transportation, Finance, and Policy Division for this Tuesday, March 18th. The chair, Representative Frank Hornstein. And we have a number of bills that we'll try to get through in our allotted time today. So I would just ask for authors and testifiers to be precise in your testimony. We will approve the minutes once we have a quorum, but we'll take the bills in order. Our first bill today is House File 1737, Representative Lippert. Welcome to the committee, and I will move that House File 1737 be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus transportation bill, which, members, we are inching finally towards putting together in the next week or so. Please state your name for the record, and we'll get going.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, I'm Representative Todd Lippert, and I'm glad to be here presenting House File 1737. As a greater Minnesota legislator, I'm both concerned about climate change and concerned that we are including all of Minnesota in our responses to climate change as well. We're moving towards the electrification of transportation, and we will need additional electric charging vehicle infrastructure to make this happen. I had a constituent tell me a story recently. She had a friend who had an electric Hyundai from another state, and she liked that vehicle, and she went to a Hyundai dealer nearby in the state of Minnesota. She wanted to move to an electric vehicle herself, and she was told that they don't sell that vehicle here in Minnesota because there simply aren't enough electric charging stations. So at least one car dealer is making a decision that's not based on demand but on the infrastructure that's present in our state. As we invest in EV infrastructure, we'll need to make sure we're investing in greater Minnesota infrastructure, too. We need to be building out corridors for electric vehicles and building out these charging stations as well, both to make sure that people in greater Minnesota have access and also to allow people in the metro to be venturing out into greater Minnesota with their vehicles, too. And finally, there are more options coming online for electric vehicles like pickups, crossovers that people in greater Minnesota often use now and prefer. And so we want to make sure that everyone in the state has access to this infrastructure. This bill allocates $8 million in fiscal year 2020 for electric vehicle charging equipment, but 60% of it is allocated towards greater Minnesota. And with that, I'll turn it over to Alan Gleckner, who's here to testify.
Thank you, Representative. Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Alan Gleckner, and I'm the Director of Energy Markets with Fresh Energy. Fresh Energy is an independent energy policy nonprofit with over 25 years of experience providing nonpartisan policy analysis on energy issues across the state. We are very supportive of Representative Lippert's bill because it will provide much-needed support to increase electric vehicle adoption in Minnesota. Electric vehicles are growing in popularity, but there is still a chicken and the egg problem when it comes to public electric vehicle charging. There needs to be a network of EV chargers before most people will be willing to purchase an electric vehicle, but there aren't enough customers yet to make a profitable business model for installing EV chargers until there are more EVs on the road. So the early public support for public charging provided in this bill is much needed and will help spur electric vehicle sales in the state. More EVs in Minnesota will, in turn, help reduce pollution, improve public health, and reduce electricity prices for customers. Another piece of this bill that we think is really important that Representative Lippert highlighted is the approach to make sure that the majority of the funding here goes to greater Minnesota. We think it's critical that, as you mentioned, there's corridors along state highways all throughout the state where you can be confident that you can take an electric vehicle to travel all across the state and be confident that you'll be able to make it and charge across the state. So between those two pieces, we are very supportive of this legislation, and thank you for the opportunity to speak today. We urge your support for House File 1737.
Thank you, Mr. Gleckner. Are there questions for Mr. Gleckner or the author, Representative Petersburg?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I have a few concerns with this bill, not so much that we shouldn't have providing more charging stations. I think that's something that, as electric cars become more and more prevalent, we certainly need to do that. My concern is the fact that the state owns them. We don't, as far as I know, we don't own any gas stations that provide fuel for carbon fuels. And so I'm not sure why we'd want to do this. Wouldn't it make more sense for us to incentivize the private market to actually provide these with the same number of dollars rather than the state trying to own them? Because it's a little bit of a counterproductive when we own the electricity and the charging units, but we aren't getting any gas taxes for it. And so my concern is just, have you thought about other ways in which we can allow these charging stations and so forth to stay private rather than state-owned? That's my question.
Mr. Lippert or Mr. Gleckner?
I can go ahead. I'll start. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think as this conversation is beginning, it's appropriate for the state to be a solid partner in this, and that conversations about public-private partnership, and that will evolve as the technology and the conversation about this transition evolves. So that'll be my starting point for conversation.
Thank you. I can add to that, too, to Mr. Chair, Representative. That model is being deployed already with the settlement dollars from the Volkswagen settlement, where the state is providing a public-private partnership and using those funds in sort of a grant program. So I think I don't necessarily read that as being precluded in this bill. And I think so as it's being laid over, I think that's something to be considered as to how that might work. But that approach is being used already as well.
Mr. Petersburg.
Well, I think the bill is actually very clear. It gives, it says on very line point 1.6, from the general fund to the Department of Transportation to install public electric vehicle supply equipment throughout the state. It doesn't talk anything about partnership or combined direction at all. It simply says, hey, department, go out there and install them. That's direct state ownership, and so I don't see where that goes. I would be much more inclined to support this bill if it had some sort of partnership in which eventually turns over to the private sector, but this doesn't see that, unless I'm incorrect in my reading of the bill.
Response?
I have no further response to that question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Torkelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. How much revenue will be generated by these state charging stations, and where will it go?
Mr. Chair, Representative, we don't have direct estimates yet. It kind of depends on a lot of forward-looking assumptions of adoptions, how fast that happens, exactly which electric service territories are installed in, the tariffs under which those chargers would be affected. So there's a lot of variables, but we could try to rough something up for you if that would be helpful.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That would be very helpful to see some sort of a business plan on revenue generation.
Okay, thank you very much. Are there any other discussion to House File 1737? I just wanted to thank you, Representative Lippert, for bringing this. I do believe that in order to successfully electrify our infrastructure, we're going to have to deploy more vehicles. That's a variety of factors are involved with doing that, but then we have to have the infrastructure to support them. We have to do both. So I appreciate that you're working on the second of those necessary ingredients to move us forward on this very worthy endeavor. So with that, members, we'll lay over House File 1737 for possible inclusion in the omnibus transportation bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
Our next bill is House File 16. Excuse me? Okay, well, I think we're going to need to talk to the a couple of other members about that, and then we'll although I do see Representative Mann and I do see Representative Kosnick here. You're in a committee, so maybe we should, if that's okay, Representative Joachim. I'm going to have Representative Mann and Representative Kosnick come up together. They each have bills that are almost identical, and so we'll just have them present them together. This relates to extending the Metro Mobility service area to Lakeville. And I will move both of these House files, 98 and 171, for possible inclusion in the Omnibus Transportation Finance Bill. So would you welcome to the committee? I think, is this your first transportation bill?
Yes,
Mr. Welcome,
Chair.
Welcome.
Thank you.
So, Representative Mann, why don't you present, and then we'll have Representative Kosnick, and then we have a couple of testifiers. So,
perfect.
I like the fact that you're here together, and both in agreement about how to proceed. So,
yes. Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. Today I'm discussing House File 98, which will bring Metro Mobility Services to the City of Lakeville. Extending the service would help as many as 5,000 seniors and people living with disabilities get to their doctor's appointment, go to the grocery store, go shopping, get their medication. This is an important issue for me personally, as I practice medicine in Lakeville, and I have many patients who had a very difficult time getting to their doctor's appointments. I had one patient in particular whose wife was in a wheelchair, and she had pretty complex medical issues, and I would only see her once a year, because for her to get to the clinic, they would have to charter a van that cost them $125. A service like this not only improves access to care, it also makes it easier for people to remain in their homes and stay independent for as long as possible, both things in the end which will save our healthcare system significant amounts of money.
Thank you, Representative. Representative Kosnick, welcome to your committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We have the city administrator from the city of Lakeville here to testify in support of it, and then I have another testifier. If it's okay with you, I'd introduce Justin Miller, our city administrator.
Thank you, Mr.
Chair. Thank you, Mr. Miller. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record.
Sure. Thank you. Justin Miller, city administrator, city of Lakeville. Mr. Chair and committee members, thank you for the opportunity to testify today in support of House File 98 and House File 171, bills which would bring Metro Mobility Service to the city of Lakeville. My remarks today will be brief, because we believe this is a fairly straightforward issue. Since 2009, taxpayers in the city of Lakeville have been paying into the Metropolitan Council Transit Service District. As a result of this, the Kinnerick Avenue Park and Ride was constructed along I-35, and today that facility has one of the highest fare recovery rates of all metropolitan transit routes. We've also been active participants and supporters of the Metro Orange Line, which is planned to eventually serve Lakeville. And earlier this month, we approved our 2040 comprehensive plan, which more than doubles our average housing density along the Metro Red Line corridor in the hopes of spurring even more transit investment in Lakeville. However, one service our taxpayers are paying for but do not receive the benefit of is Metro Mobility. Without fixed route service, Metro Mobility does not cross the border from Burnsville or Apple Valley into Lakeville. On numerous occasions, we've received emails and phone calls from people who've recently moved to Lakeville, assuming that this service is available, only to find out that they need to find alternate accommodations to make crucial trips to doctor's appointments, grocery stores, church services, or other basic quality of life trips. These bills would rectify the situation, and the city of Lakeville supports whichever approach the legislature decides is best to provide a service that our taxpayers are already paying for. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions for Mr. Miller? Appreciate your testimony. Representative Kosnick, I think you have another person.
And Mr. Chair, I'm here to introduce House File 171, which is one of three bills that deals with Metro Mobility. There is an author's amendment on that, so if it's appropriate, I should introduce that. The A1 amendment just simply changes the effective date of the bill for starting service, and so I'd like to introduce that and have that approved, and then we'll continue.
Okay. That's the A1 amendment, members. Is there any discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed, the motion prevails. Thank you, Representative Kosnick.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. With me as well, I have a friend of mine, Nick Jones, and Mr. Howe, was the letter that we forwarded to you, was that, I didn't see that in my packet. Was that included for the committee? I can speak to it if it wasn't, but...
I mean, I think you can either way, if you
okay.
Please.
Now, before I introduce Mr. Jones, part of the other bills that I have is House File 307 that, you know, for a couple of logistical reasons, we're not introducing that at this time. But to share with the committee and the community here, this is something that I've worked on since I became elected and was out campaigning and talking to citizens in Lakeville. As Mr. Miller had stated, people move in to the community and are a little bit surprised that they don't have Metro Mobility Service that they kind of thought was included in the taxing district. So it's something that I've worked on, but I recognize that it has a cost to it, and a Representative Mann's bill, there's a fiscal note that it, you know, it's no secret that does come with a cost. I kind of call it taxation without mobilization. We're paying the tax for this service, but we don't have the mobility aspect of that. So I think it's kind of a taxation fairness issue. But I'd like to introduce Mr. Jones here to talk about how the service may impact him and how the service would be important in his life.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Welcome to the committee, Mr. Jones, and please state your name for the record.
I'm Nick Jones, or Nicholas Jones. I have cerebral palsy, and I am unable to... I'm unable to have a driver's license due to the fact that I am legally blind. Also, I guess I shouldn't be driving one, driving without one. Anyway, so there's one out of many goals in my life is full independence. In order for me to achieve this, I need a service like Metro Mobility. Service expansion into Lakeville, and there are some able-bodied people that take their daily lives for daily activities for granted, such as going to work, going out with friends, running errands, and of course, complaining during rush hour. These are things that are impossible for me to do without a service like Metro Mobility. Currently, I am dependent on my parents for providing a van with a ramp. And how embarrassing is that? On occasion, my friends and I like to take a light rail up to events up here to the Twin Cities. Once I'm at the station, I'm good to go. But I need a way to get to the station. Again, Metro Mobility expansion into Lakeville would solve this problem. Another reason, I still live at home at age 27 because I am totally dependent on my parents to drive me everywhere. I work in Lakeville, but have no way to get there without the help of my parents. So, in conclusion, I welcome the independence that Metro Mobility would aid in my life by extending their service area into all of Lakeville. Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Jones. Really appreciate your testimony and your first-person account of the challenges you face. Are there questions for Mr. Jones? Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, but I'm just going to offer him permission. You can still complain about congestion, so please do.
Great. Representative Kosnick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I would like to also acknowledge Nick's mom, Debbie Jones, here, who would also be impacted by this and families like theirs. Unfortunately, in the packet, it's omitted, and we can submit this to the committee later. I really took notice of this issue, like I said, when I was out talking to neighbors. We have a group home in Lakeville run by Living Well, and people, similar situations, paratransit, dependent riders. I think this particular house has about six residents in it. You know, for one particular person, Michael, who couldn't be here today, would like to have a job, and he had a job at Home Depot. But the ability for staff to drive him there consistently, even for a limited schedule, prohibited him from being able to work there because he didn't have reliable transportation there. But so I'll just forward that. I think you get the point of the independence that's really important to people. But more to the policy aspect is that, you know, this is something that I think it's a bipartisan issue that we can all agree on. I know last year when we worked on it last session, Representative Joachim signed onto the bill. Representative Mason, I appreciate you being a co-author. But even despite that, I recognize fully that there's a cost to this. And so we've waited for 10 years to figure out a way to continue to advocate for it. But with House File 307, that hopefully we'll have more discussion on, it was in one of your larger bills, just to share with the committee, through a working group on trying to reduce the cost of metro mobility through some transportation network providers that may be able to provide some of these services if they have specific vehicles, or not all riders need wheelchair-accessible vehicles. It's estimated that if they were to share their customer data to check which rides may be Medicare reimbursed availability through the federal government, that we could save Metro Mobility about $8 million a year. And so pairing the two ideas together, I think it's why I'm such a strong advocate for this becoming, extending the service to Lakeville and finally providing some quality in terms of the geographics and ending taxation without representation. So I appreciate the chair's thoughtful consideration and the committee's time.
Thank you, members. Is there any questions for either of our colleagues? Representative Mason.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I know Representative Kosnick has been working on this for quite a while. But I have to make a comment regarding his tax fairness, because for many years, when I was on the board for Minnesota Valley Transit, we could not get Lakeville to participate. And I can tell you that there were a lot of people from Lakeville that were using our transportation system free of charge. So it's an ongoing problem, but at least you're in the system now.
Mr. Chair and Representative Mason, I certainly appreciate and understand that kind of using the transportation systems throughout the metro. It's something that we've talked about. Lakeville does have a park and ride on Kendrick Avenue, as Administrator Miller had mentioned. And as you're out campaigning, if you want to meet some people, go out to the bus stops. It's a great place to meet constituents. But even there, I find that in our Lakeville park and ride, we've got people from Northfield, Owatonna, New Prague, Shakopee, maybe even some people from Egan think that the reverse commute's quicker to jump on our express bus. But so that is an issue, and we share that as well, and we're glad to be in the taxing district. But I just think it's time that we provide the service that many of our constituents in that area think that they should, that they're paying for it, so they think that they feel that they should have that service available.
Thank you. I just wanted to make one final comment. First of all, to thank both of you for your bills and for appearing together. This is a very important issue, and we're hoping to find the proper funding source. I think data sharing is certainly an option. There's some other options. So we'll have to just figure this out in the broader context of the omnibus bill. I'm very pleased that there is a proposal to separate out the Metro Mobility line item from the broader Metro Transit line item. I think that's a step forward. So, you know, given that, Given several different funding options, you know, over the next couple of weeks, we want to, you know, just figure out what is the best way, the most cost-effective way, and the fairest way to extend the service, at least initially to Lakeville, and of course, then we can talk about some of the other municipalities and places. But right now, I think the focus is on Lakeville, and we'll be, you know, again, trying to figure out in the next couple of weeks the best way to do it. But these bills are on the table, and I really appreciate, again, both of you appearing and appearing together. And if, do either of you have any final comments for the committee?
No, thank you, Mr. Chair. This is a pretty straightforward bill that would really help out the members of our community, so we just really appreciate your support.
Thank you.
And to Mr. Chair and to the committee, it's kind of ironic. Last year we did all the heavy lifting and with the two combined bills that I spoke of and ran it through all the proper committees here in the House and the deadlines. In the Senate, it was a little bit slower, but I'm happy to say if it puts a little comfort to the committee that the other body has been moving this bill quite rapidly, and I appreciate Senator Hall doing that and across the street for us, and so I think there's some room here to put something together and finally pass this. So I appreciate the committee.
With that, members, I'm laying over both House Files 98 and House Files 171. Thank you, Representatives Mann and Kosnick. Okay. I'd like to take House File 1652 next, if Representative Joachim is ready. And then after that, we have a little bit more. We'll hear your bill, and then we have a little bit more of a complicated minutes motion, but we'll wait till after your bill to do that. Okay. Representative Joachim, this is, does this have to go to taxes, or we keep it in our committee here?
Taxes I thought keep in committee, too. I think you can do both. I'm not sure.
Okay, well, we'll lay it over
or we could send it to taxes, well, but you always still have jurisdiction over it if you want.
I think that, you know, Representative Joachim, in the past, this bill has gone to taxes.
Yes.
So, I guess the omnibus goes to taxes eventually, so. What does Mr. Shatner say?
Well, I would be happy with you laying it over.
Okay, I think, yeah, you're right.
Whatever you like.
Well, people are assuming this bill goes to taxes. I don't know. So, no, we'll lay it over for now. Representative Joachim, why don't you present House File 1652? And the motion now is to lay it over for possible inclusion in omnibus bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And your prerogative, whatever you'd like to do. So, thank you, members. House File 1652 is the authorization for the Met Council to issue bonds for the regional transit capital projects. Met Council issues these types of general obligation bonds to implement the Council's transit capital improvement program. Regional transit bonds are not like state general obligation bonds. They are funded by the transit debt service levy collected from the transit taxing area within the 7-county metropolitan region. These regional transit bonds are generally sold as other bond debt is retired, so there's minimal impacts on local property tax for debt service. The authority to authorize these bonds has been sought and enacted since 1989 under Minnesota Statute 473.39. The request for this biennium has been increased over the previous year only by the inflation factor. The bond proceeds are used for replacement buses and capital improvements to the regional public transit system. This includes funding for Metropolitan Transit and all other public transit providers in the region, including Metro Mobility, the opt-out programs, and other small urban and rural area dial-a-ride programs. And I have Judge Chetnan from the Met Council here to answer any technical questions members may have.
Okay. Thank you very much, Mr. Chetnan. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Again, my name is Judd Shetton. I'm the Government Affairs Director for the Metropolitan Council. And I think Representative Joachim did a great job explaining these bonds. This is not a new request. We come back regularly asking for this. In 2017, Representative Koznick carried these bonds for us in the House. Senator Paul Anderson carried them for the Senate. Again, we need these in order to basically be our local match for federal bus replacement. This, again, goes to help us replace our fleet for the Metro Mobility buses, the Suburban Transit Provider buses, Dial Ride Metro Transit. James Clark from the Suburban Transit Association also extends his full thrust of support behind this as well. And again, happy to answer any questions, but we would be happy to have these carried in the omnibus bill as well. And again, we just appreciate any support we can get from you, and please let me know if you have any questions.
Thank I know you, we have a couple. We do amendments. Have a couple of amendments. But questions for Mr. Shetton? Okay. Representative Hausman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just an observation, of course. This is the problem with the transit taxing district because, as we just heard in the previous testimony, the use of a transit system doesn't neatly fall there, and yet it is only those property taxpayers who live within the transit taxing district who have this property tax imposed on them. Just an observation. One of these days we have to figure this out.
Yes, I agree. Any other questions for Mr. Shetton? So there's an A1 amendment. Who is the owner of the A? Oh, Representative Torkelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The A1 amendment has to do with GANs, and GANs is something that Mr. Shetton will be happily explain to the committee.
Okay. Mr. Shetton, will I'll move the A1 amendment.
Great. Mr. Chair, member.
Is that yours?
It is. Well, it is my amendment, and I'll be happy to move it.
Oh, you can move it.
I do move it.
Okay. The amendment is moved.
Great. Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, members. The A1 amendment is a very friendly amendment. You're going to see this show up in the governor's bill that we hear on Thursday afternoon. I appreciate Representative Torkelson coming forward with this amendment. What we are attempting to do with this amendment and the language in the governor's bill is to correct an inadvertent error that occurred in the 2017 funding bill. What occurred during that session, I know that there are folks here on this committee who will remember there was language that was added that said we cannot use regional transit capital bonds to construct or extend a light rail line. And we agreed to that language. Things changed at the end of that session anyway, so now those constructions of the light rail lines are now being funded by the counties. However, when that language was added to this, rather than having it applied to the 2017 Regional Capital Transit Bond Authority, they applied it to an entire subdivision. And included in that subdivision is language that allows, it's a financing tool that the council uses to help finance federal dollars. And so we are just correcting that because it has no impact on state funds at all. It just allows us to finance dollars that come in as part of a full funding grant agreement as we construct a light rail line or the orange line or something like that. It's because those federal dollars appropriations come in very lumpy, and this allows us to finance that knowing that we're going to be receiving an appropriation every year from the feds. So this is extremely important to us. I will also say it's extremely important to Hennepin County, and I do think that this just absolutely clarifies it. It has nothing to do with state dollars, and it really has nothing to do with the regional transit capital bonds, but it is a big deal.
Representative Elkins.
Yeah. Quick observations. I recall that this is also about the cheapest way for the council to borrow money because the federal feds are good for it, and so the interest rates are very low.
Yes, Mr. Chair, Representative Elkins, just to follow up on that, you're exactly right. The council has the ability to issue certificates of participation in order to do that financing. However, using the GANs grant anticipation notes is done much more cheap. They finance for less than 1%, and this is how we finance the Green Line and the Blue Line and other transitways. So this is just restoring an inadvertent error. And again, I'd like to thank Representative Torkelson for his help on this. We tried to fix this last year at the very end of session as well. We just, with a lot of things that were happening end of session, it didn't survive, but your support of this amendment would be very, very friendly, and again, you're going to hear about this again on Thursday.
Thank you, and I'll just make an observation, Representative Torkelson, that this isn't just a friendly amendment. Mr. Chetney called it a very, very friendly. So is there any discussion of the A1? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed, the motion prevails. So we have a A19-0238 amendment. Is that yours, Representative Runbeck?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, it is.
Okay. You can move your amendment and explain it.
Yes, I'll move the A19-0238 amendment, and I'll go ahead and explain it. Or I guess it really is a series of questions. This would reduce the amount. I know that this request for bonded indebtedness occurs every 2 years, and it does seem like it's a bit on autopilot. I just feel like we don't know quite enough. We have looked at the Metro Transit budget, but it doesn't spell out in any detail how the $100 million so-called new money is going to be spent. This number, 92, that you have in the bill doesn't line up with anything in the unified budget. And we know that there's a lot of changes going on within the bus system, different types of vehicles. There's some, been reduction in service. So it seems like we need to know a lot more. And that's basically the purpose of the amendment, is that at this point, I think we deserve to know. This is a lot of money. And, what types of vehicles, et cetera, et cetera.
Thank you, Representative Runbeck, Representative Uyakhtemor, Mr. Shetland.
Thank you, members. I would oppose this amendment. I'm not quite sure about the reasoning behind it, but the results I do know would be drastically underfunding our transit system. About 80% of a bus is federal money, and this would not allow us to go out for that federal money because we wouldn't be able to match it. So this would be devastating regionally to our ability to replace the fleet, including Metro Mobility, the opt-outs, everyone.
Okay.
So,
further discussion?
Mr. Chair, I'll just say again that we do this every 2 years. It's $80, $90, $100 million. I'd like to know how it ties into the budget, how it ties in to the balance sheet and so on. How do you handle depreciation? How do we know Met Council is putting away money for depreciation on these buses and taking care of the buses and, preserving their lifetime as long as it can be?
A series of questions. Perhaps Mr. Shetland could briefly answer those questions before
Great.
We vote on
Thank
the
Thank you,
amendment.
Mr. Chair and Representative Runbeck. The council has a policy that the life of a bus, depending on which type of bus it is, has a life cycle of about 12 to 14 years. And one of the reasons why you see us coming back every year asking for this authority is because we retire buses on that schedule. And so we need this authority to keep our fleet replacement on track. And so you asked what kind of buses that these are. These are Metro Mobility buses. These are Suburban Transit Provider buses. These are regular route Metro Transit buses. They're the dial-a-ride buses in the exurban areas. And so as Representative Uyakhtemor mentioned, this would be devastating for us because based on the way that we retire our fleet, if this went into effect, we would not have the local match in place that would allow us to regularly replace our fleet. So this is not a friendly amendment, Mr. Chair.
Well, Mr. Chair, I'm not going to belabor this, but I the point is it's a bit of a vote of confidence issue here, and how much do we need to know and how much should we know as people funding, as taxpayers funding a very expensive system? And I'll just say, there's more to it, and I'd like to find out, what we won't know, of course, by the time we pass this. But and certainly the Met Council knows, how many and at what cost the various types of vehicles are, what kind of fuel source, et cetera, et cetera. So it seems like it's an unknown, and when it comes to capital investments, when you look at the data provided in Capital Investment Committee, for any other large capital spending, that data is there. So I will leave it at that, and I will withdraw the amendment. I thank you for the time.
Thank you very much, Representative Runbeck. Are there any final comments from the author, Representative Joachim?
Yes, Mr. Chair, thank you for the discussion, members. These biennial authorizations benefit regional transit by assuring timeliness of funding authority for fleet replacements and securing match requirements for available federal funds. So I ask for your support.
Thank you very much. With that, I will... Will you want to renew your motion, Representative Joachim? Your bill as amended.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I renew my motion that House File 1652 as amended be laid over.
Okay. With that, we are laying over 1652. And our next bill on the calendar is Representative Elkins. And I definitely want to make sure we take the Lucero bill at some point right after the Elkins bill. So, members, I know that we can get the agenda done. We would prefer that.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My testifiers are coming down. I can move that that we lay over House File 316 for potential inclusion in the omnibus transportation finance bill.
Oh, you want to do 316 now? Is that what we're doing? You
have yes, I would rather do 316 first.
Okay, your preference is to do 316 now because mm-hmm. you have got testifiers.
Yes.
Okay, members, so we're going a little bit out of order. I just wanted to let you know we're not doing House File 1996 at present, but we are on House File 316 yeah. on the back side of the agenda.
Yeah, thank you.
So, thank you very much, and we are laying this over for possible inclusion.
Yeah, so I have in-district testifiers who need to leave. So.
Okay, I appreciate that, and then as soon as this bill is done, we'll get to the Lucero bill.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair. So there is a handout in your package that talks about the work of the 494 Corridor Commission, which is one of the one of several transportation management organizations in the Twin Cities area. The 494 Corridor Commission and its commuter services, TMO, services businesses along the 494 corridor in the Southwest Metro, providing advice and ride-sharing services to help reduce congestion in the corridor itself. It's been I've been affiliated personally with this organization for almost 20 years, was a former chair myself. It does really good work. We're here today because the primary funding for all of the region's transportation management organizations is through federal congestion mitigation and air quality grants. In this case, the member cities of the 494 Corridor Commission also pay dues to help support the organization. But several years ago, there was an reinterpretation of federal law that prohibits TMOs now from using CMAQ money to cover their overhead expenses. And so starting in 2016, the TMOs have been coming to the legislature for an allocation to backfill. The first one was $77,000 in 2016. And then in the last biennium, there was $300,000 allocated to the 494 commuter TMO split between $150,000 in each of the 2 years of the biennium. And so we're back to request the same level of funding for this coming biennium as was provided in the last biennium. And I'll let turn it over to Brad Aho, who's the current chair of the commission, to give a little bit more background.
Thank you, Representative Elkins, and
welcome back.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, committee members. Appreciate the time to be here today. My name is Brad Aho. I serve as on the Eden Prairie City Council. I've served for 14 years, and I've been a member of the 494 Corridor Commission just about my entire tenure on the council, and I am currently chair, as Representative Elkins stated. We are a five-city joint powers association. Those cities are Eden Prairie, Dinah, Bloomington, Richfield, and Minnetonka. And we really see the need to improve and maintain the transportation system in our area because it really is a key area. We have actually over 240,000 jobs in our area. It's actually more than the combination of this of the cities of Eden, of Minneapolis and St. Paul combined. So 494 Corridor Commission has a group of staff that is called Commuter Services, which is the which comprises the TMO. We work with over 1,000 employers in the area, and what we do is we provide services to those employers and their employees to help them find different ways to get to work and to do transportation through the area, through the corridor, without driving alone. And you can see on this sheet that as in 2017, as a result of our efforts, we reduced the number of miles traveled by 34 million miles, which is really a significant amount. So even though we're a very small organization and we have small funding needs, relatively speaking, we really have excellent results. We also track our metrics very thoroughly to make sure that we are effective and we are achieving what we need to do. And all of our cities do contribute, and we contribute about 40 cents per resident every year to this cause. But with those changes, as Representative Elkin stated in the CMAQ interpretation, we really need some additional funding to make ends meet. And so that's really why we're here today. We also work very closely with MnDOT and are partnering with MnDOT. So when there's transportation construction projects that MnDOT is undergoing, we work with MnDOT to make sure that we're communicating to the residents, to the employers, and to all those people commuting through the area on how they can find alternative ways to get to and from work. And it's been a very good relationship, and we want to continue to provide those services. So with that, I will conclude, but I just thank you for your time today, and just hope that we can get this through. Thank you.
Appreciate it. Thank you. Councilmember Ajo, thank you for your many years. I've enjoyed working with you on various projects in the Southwest Metro, so thank you.
Thank you.
Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and to the testifier, too. My just question is, are there anything that this TMO, the 494 Commission, is doing that duplicates what the Met Council does, because they are also a planning organization and transportation-related as well, and how does that relate to other groups around the metro area and the suburbs for that?
Good question, Mr. Chair and Representative. There are a number of TMO organizations, but really we're separated by geographic area. And so the 494 Corridor Commission running commuter services, our commuter services is really focused on our five city areas and a little bit west and beyond. We also help with them as well. But, I mean, our main focus is those five cities that I stated. And so there's really no overlap between what Metro Transit does and what we do. We're helping people find van pools, find and organize van pools. We're working with employers to organize carpool, preferential carpool parking and monitor those systems. We're working with employers to meet their transit goals in terms of when they do, for each city has different requirements for transit-oriented parking and things like that. We work with each of those employers to help them write their plans, make those goals. We work with providing telecommuting services. Just basically every alternative method that's available today, we're helping to provide those services, both to the employers and directly to the transit riders.
Representative Elkin?
Yeah, just to follow up on that, in my time on the Bloomington City Council and on the Met Council, I found a great benefit in having geographically focused transportation management organizations, because the TMOs are then able to develop closer relationships with both the employers and the cities. So, for example, the 494 Commuter Services staff was instrumental in working with the cities in the Corridor Commission to develop transportation demand management ordinances in each city that support the work of what the TMO does as well. So having that close knowledge of both the cities and their employers has enabled 494 Commuter Services to be particularly effective.
We also provide services on site at many of the large employers. So we're working with Best Buy, for example. We go on site to their facility several times a year, provide commuter services, like a fair, to providing all the information to all their employers, so they and the employees, so they know how they can do it. They can get work on getting bus passes through the Metro Transit organization. So we're working with everyone.
Thank you. One quick follow-up, Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So if I paraphrase, basically you're not really dealing with the corridor highway itself directly. You're really doing alternative transportation along that particular network. And so if that's the case, I appreciate that. But my final question is, are there other corridors that will be needing funding like this too? Is there a 694 corridor commission? Is there a 94 corridor commission, et cetera, that's not?
There are not any other commissions that I know of, other than there are organizations that deal with like 35W and 169, and there's those organizations. But we're really the only TMO that's really focused on this corridor. And like I say, if you look at the amount of jobs in our area, it exceeds Minneapolis and St. Paul combined. So there's a high number of jobs in this area, and it's really critical, especially when we look at what's going to take place in the coming years with the 494 and 35W projects. We're thankful that those are going to take place, but there's going to be a lot of construction, which is going to have a large impact on people's commute and the ability to move freight through the corridor, which is really important.
Yeah, and then to follow up again, I'd say 494 Commuter Service is probably the only suburban TMO of its kind. Minneapolis and St. Paul have their own TMOs, and for the other communities, the Met Council operates a TMO.
Okay, thank you. Mm-hmm. I don't see any other members on the list. And I don't know if you want to very quickly wrap up.
Very quickly, just reiterate the motion to request that House File 316 be laid over for potential inclusion in the omnibus finance bill.
Great. And with that, your bill is laid over.
Thank you very much.
Our next bill on the agenda is House File 2499, Representative Lucero. I think we have a number of testifiers on both sides of this issue. Welcome to the committee, Representative Lucero. Members, Representative Lucero has been he's an alumnus of this committee, and so welcome back. And I will lay over your House File 2499 for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. So please present your bill, and then I think you have some testifiers in favor of the bill, and I understand we do have some opponents as well that wanted to testify. So.
Thank you, Mr.
Welcome
Chair.
Back to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Mr. Chair, I would like to offer, if somebody would move the DE2 amendment.
Okay, then that is an amendment to get
so
the
moved.
Bill. Okay, and that is, Representative Runbeck moves the DE2. That is an amendment to get the bill in the shape you would like us to consider it in. Do you want to explain the amendment?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, members of the committee, this language is among the language that unfortunately fell victim to the veto of the omnibus bill last year. So this is one of the many bills that this legislature has seen this year in continuing to bring back that language. And what the DE2 does is bring in conform with the language where we left off last year that had agreement from, or at least, agreement might be a strong word, but at least from MnDOT. It addressed MnDOT's concerns, and then to pick up where we left off last year.
Thank you. Discussion of the DE2? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
The motion prevails.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So just a little bit of background. So in the state of Minnesota here, we have approximately 500,000 septic systems in use, and that would include primary residents, secondary residence cabins, and businesses. And when we have cold temperatures like we've seen this year, that can put a lot of stress on septic systems and can freeze them. And when there's a freezing situation, a backup of any kind, the sewage has one place to go, and that is generally to the basement of the structure, which creates a health hazard, which creates just an unpleasant situation, destruction, etc. And so it's for this reason, like school buses, like garbage trucks, when it comes to the seasonal weight restrictions that we have here in the state of Minnesota, there are exemptions. And this seeks to add the category of septic trucks into that category so that when there are emergency situations, that they will be able to respond in a timely manner without having to get permits. So now, under current law, the governor can issue executive orders, and one has been issued this year that would grant exemptions. But in the test, by the way, the reason my testifiers can't be here is with the incredible amount of rain that we've had and melting and snow, none of them can be here because they're all very busy. And there are backups and other things happening right now. On average, it's about 8 to 10 per day per septic hauler. And so that's why we don't see anybody. But based on what my testifiers have said, the governor's office generally has to issue these on a regular basis, annual basis, in order to allow for exemptions of the weight restrictions. So this is already happening. What I'm seeking to do is simply recognize what is already happening and allow that in state law. When I'm reading the bill summary, one thing I want to draw members' attention to is that the bill summary in number two, if you look on page two of the bill, there's references to other vehicles, and I'm looking for the vehicle type, but there are other vehicles that are above and beyond septic tanks, and I have clarified this with nonpartisan staff. This does not change the law, and so I think the bill summary is a little bit misleading. What nonpartisan staff has told me is that the changes that you're seeing there on page two for other types of trucks are a clarification, not a change of present law.
Questions of the author? Are you finished?
I can leave it right there.
Representative Hausner.
Well, to that point, the bill summary is as introduced, and are you speaking to the delete everything that you just added? So that may be.
Thank you for the clarification, Representative Hausner.
That's a good point.
Yeah.
Good point. So with that, Mr. Chair, I can certainly stand for any questions.
Questions of the committee, and then we'll get to several testifiers that have signed up. Okay, why don't we move into the public testimony? I have Mr. Hand, Mr. Rudin. I see others who might be interested. Are there others that are interested? Okay, Mr. Reynoso. Okay, why don't we have the majority leader come? Once a majority leader, always a majority leader.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you. Glad to be here, and I don't want to correct you, but I was the minority leader.
Minority leader.
Which
okay.
was almost as good as being
okay.
the leader.
Okay. All right.
Thank you. Good to see you. Thank you for allowing me to be here this afternoon, and thanks, Representative Lucero, who is a friend, and appreciate your work as a committee and your work as individual legislators. I am David Hand. I am the Executive Director of the Minnesota Association of Townships, and as a township organization, we do have concerns about this particular bill. I think there are similar bills going through the legislative process this year that deal with weight restrictions. I know many legislators do not represent areas with townships, but there are almost 1,800 townships in the state of Minnesota. About 16% of the population lives in townships. Townships manage, maintain 55,000 miles of roads and about, I think, 6,000 bridges, which has more road miles than any other level of government in the state of Minnesota. These are the first miles that lead into our economy, our economic system, come from farms and other areas, and they are all maintained by townships, most of the dollars of which come from local property taxes. And the Highway User Tax Fund, Distribution Fund, the $2.5 billion that gets spent on roads, the 39% of the roads that are township roads get about 2.2% of that money, even though the residents of townships drive a lot of miles to get anywhere, so they're contributing maybe disproportionately to that fund. But with respect to the change of the weights, most of these township roads are not paved. They are gravel. They are not built to withstand 10 tons of weight. Probably 5 tons is more like it. And so when we run these heavyweight trucks on township roads, they do great damage. And since the legislature has not yet seen in its wisdom to allocate additional funding to help townships maintain those roads and repair and build perhaps stronger bridges, we would urge some hesitation about permitting these heavier trucks to travel township roads and basically put the burden on taxpayers who live in the townships to pay increasing amounts of money to deal with the damage that these vehicles cause. So we're here today to ask that in your consideration of this bill that perhaps other solutions can be found. I'm certainly sympathetic to the point that Representative Lucero is making. These are also township residents, I imagine, for the most part, that are dealing with septic systems and other things. But there may be other ways to manage that. There may be smaller vehicles, lighter weight vehicles that could be used. Other things, there may be some assessment on the vehicles themselves that could be dedicated to the repair of the damage that the roads do. So I think there are other solutions that could be reached. But simply lifting the ban or lifting the weight limit to allow heavier trucks is not the solution that the townships think is what will solve the problem. So that is, I'm happy to answer any questions, but that is our concern.
Thank you, Mr. Hand. And and you still have I know you had concerns about the original bill, and you would still have concerns about the amended bill as well?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Hand. Questions? Okay. Well, we really appreciate your testimony and, right. and seeing you again. I saw Mr. Udine and Mr. Renaud, so Mr. Rose, would you like to come now? Mr. Renoso, welcome. Please state your name for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Edward Renoso. I'm the political director for Teamsters Joint Council 32. We represent in excess of 62,000 active and retired members in the state of Minnesota and thousands within the trucking industry itself. I come here to testify in opposition to House File 2499 for many reasons. There are a lot of concerns that we have as an organization, but I'll just I'll mention some of the biggest. That this bill, you know, really wasn't thought through in the process that it would create a permitting process in itself. The department wouldn't know where these trucks are operating, and as Mr. Hahn just said, you know, these would be operating in sometimes townships that aren't equipped to handle this kind of increase. And the language itself says that the driver must travel the most direct route. If there's no permitting process, who's going to govern which routes they go through? Who's going to know which roads they are going to travel down? Secondly, who will pay for the damage for these roads? There's no permitting process. There's no fee. And they'll be able to do this year-round. We're not talking about just in the winter months when some of these septic systems freeze over. They'll be able to do this year-round. So that's another concern. And last, you know, again, I can go on and on about some of the concerns that we have, but there really is no need for this legislation, quite frankly, in that every year, this industry goes to the governor's office or the department's office, and they're able to get these exemptions for a temporary time, whether it's a week, whether it's 2 weeks, whatever's needed. So quite frankly, to extend it beyond what's really needed for the industry is just unneeded. So for those reasons and many others, we oppose this legislation and ask that this committee consider that. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions for Mr. Renoso? Appreciate it. Mr. Rudin. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Eric Rudin with MnDOT Government Affairs, and we appreciate the adoption of the DE2 amendment. That amendment included some important things, including a maximum per axle limit of 20,000 pounds. It also included requirements to follow the manufacturer's tire limit and the gross vehicle weight limit rating. So we're in a bit of an awkward position because most of the impact of this change would probably be on local roads. So we've worked with the author to try to make, you know, the proposed changes less objectionable and to protect roads and bridges more. But we certainly understand the argument that every time the legislature increases truck weights for another industry, there is additional damage that occurs to roads and bridges.
Okay. That's important to note. Questions for Mr. Rodin? Mr. Representative Elkins.
Maybe for Representative Lucero, for the author, but why do these vehicles have to be so heavy?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative. The vehicles, they're pumping. I don't have a house now that has, my primary, I should say, doesn't have a septic tank, but these trucks that come out, they carry a lot of fluid, and fluid weighs, at least water weighs 8 pounds per gallon. I don't know what septic wastewater weighs, but it is heavy, and they generally, a holding tank can be about 1,000 gallons, and so they are trucks that they come out and they pump the holding tank in order to haul it away, because there's nowhere for us for it to go other than, like I said, back up into the basement.
Representative Elkins? Okay. Well, any further discussion? Representative Lucero, did you want to leave the committee with some parting thoughts? Oh, Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just quickly, Representative Lucero, do you know what the weight of a fire truck is?
Representative Lucero?
Mr. Chair, I do not.
Petersburg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I looked up just briefly because from what I looked at, it's between 24,000 and 26,000 pounds for that vehicle on the axle weights. And I think we're looking at something that doesn't happen very often in any particular road when a truck is coming down to pump a septic system. And we certainly don't want fire trucks have to go out any more than we do as well. But the roads still need to provide the weight for that. And there's wear and tear with fire trucks as well. And I don't think any of us are talking about eliminating the need for fire trucks to go out in our rural roads. So it seems that this is a reasonable request for the amount of frequency that is actually going to happen. And it seems to make less sense for us to always have the governor have to deal with it every year. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. So final comments, and then members, just if you're following along, we're going to take Representative Elkins' bill related to deputy registrars next. Final comments.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I appreciate the committee. And I would just reiterate that these emergencies are happening anyway. And it's not as if we're faced between let's respond, let's not respond. When these are occurring, there is a response. And one of the things that I try to do in my own life and in my professional life is when a process exists that gets in the way or impedes or makes inefficient something that is occurring anyway, it defies common sense. And so I think what we've seen here is the fact that the governor this year already has had to create an exemption, and because it happens on a regular basis annually for this industry, that demonstrates the need for exemptions because freezes and backups occur, and that's a health and safety hazard. And so when that's the case, we might as well as a legislature recognize reality and codify it into law. So I appreciate your support.
Thank you very much. And I do appreciate the fact that we had the additional testifiers. I think they raised some very important concerns, and of course those will be considered as we put together our bill. So with that, we'll lay over House File 2499. Thank you, Representative Lucero. Okay, before we get to the Elkins bill on vehicle registration fees, I do want to call the committee's attention. This isn't going to be just the normal approval of minutes. I think there was so much excitement about Representative Runbeck's amendment last time on the light rail bill that there was a mistake made, and it was actually engrossed into the bill when in fact we did that amendment did not prevail. So when we approved the minutes, and Representative Petersburg is aware of this, that we would strike adoption of the Runbeck amendment and include the roll call on the bill. That was also not included. So, and then there was one more issue too, the Detmer bill. Chair Tabke moved amendments, the Representative Detmer's amendments. So that's also not included. But Representative Petersburg, with those changes,
Mr. Chair, with those changes, I approve the March 12th minutes.
Okay, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. All opposed, the motion prevails. Thank you, members. Okay, Representative.
Did you want to do the 14 minutes?
Oh, are those ready? Okay, yes, let's go ahead.
As long as we're here, Mr. Chair, I'll move the March 14th minutes as well.
Okay. The March 14th minutes are before us. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed, the motion prevails. And we are going to take Representative Elkins's House File 1008. And we'll ascertain, I believe, that this should probably bring us to the end of our committee time today, and then we'll make a decision about either continuing the bills that aren't on the agenda, or they're on the agenda that we can't get to today, maybe continuing those on Thursday so folks don't have to come back. And Representative Elkins, you have one of those, and I believe that'll be okay with Representative Schultz. So, the members, then, with that, this will be our last bill for the day, and we will not be coming back this evening. Representative Elkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll move that we lay over House File 10008 for potential inclusion in the omnibus bill.
Okay. The motion is before us. The bill is before us.
Okay.
Please explain to us House File 1008.
Yeah. I have Jim Hurst with me with the Minnesota Deputy Registrars Association, and I'm going to let him do most of the talking because the Deputy Registrars did quite a bit of analysis in support of this bill, which would increase the fees charged for the services provided by the Deputy Registrars.
Mr. Hurst, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and committee members. For the record, my name is Jim Hurst. I'm here today on behalf of the Minnesota Deputy Registrars Association. The Deputy Registrars Association is a trade group comprised of the vast majority of all deputy registrars in the state, whether they be in the metro, the suburbs, the great rural areas of the state, whether they are done by a city entity, a county entity, or a private corporate entity. I wish to start by thanking Representative Elkins as well as the co-authors of House File 1008. This represents a path forward for deputy registrars as we move towards the beginning of year three of MNLARS. As many of you are aware, there is separate legislation moving pertaining to deputy compensation for the expenses and losses that they have incurred since the launch of MNLARS, which occurred about a year and a half ago. But what House File 1008 is trying to do is to also put forward the other half of the equation, so to speak. Certainly, we want to see action on compensation, but going forward, we need to return to our historic business model, which is by having our costs being covered by, or quite frankly, user fees, which are the filing fees that the customer pays when they visit an office, whether it be for their tabs, their title work, their driver's licenses, and the like. Within your packet, you should have a one-page document, two-sided, that lays out for you some of the past history of the filing fees over the past 30 years, the rationale behind how we arrived at these proposed fee increases. And without any further ado, Mr. Chairman and members, let me basically go over what that document says.
Okay, Mr. Hurst, if you could, do you have testifiers also?
We have some deputy registrars present in case there are questions that they can answer.
Okay, I just would, again, encourage moving along if we do have testifiers, but either way, I think it's good to condense your testimony.
Very well, will do. So roughly, filing fees are set in statute. Deputy registrars, deputies cannot arbitrarily modify those fees, and so it's up to the legislature to establish what those fees are. In the last 30 years, those filing fees have been adjusted on average every 10 years. And these filing fees have not been adjusted in 8 years now for motor vehicle transactions such as tabs and title work, as well as 6 years for driver's license transactions. We certainly cannot wait another couple of years for the average time to go by to address these fees again, unfortunately. When we tried to assess what the proper filing fee should be, we had the mindset to retain the services of CPA to do what is called a time and motion study. And furthermore, we did that time and motion study prior to the launch of MNLAR so that we had a good base to work off of. Those studies were done in the fall of 2016, and then we did a follow-up study with the very same time and motion study with offices I believe it was about 6 months ago. So it was a good year and a half, about a good year after the launch of MNLARS. What we discovered by that did not come as any great surprise to us. In general, and I should point out, the time and motion study took into consideration all office types, whether they be large, small, rural, metro, private, or public. And after we assessed everything, we basically came up with tab renewals increased by 37% in time required to do those transactions. Title work was at least 34% longer, and driver's licenses were arranged from about 34% to 43%. However, it should be noted that when we did the time and motion study for driver's license to create the base, there was only one type of driver's license in existence, the standard. Since that time, of course, we've now had Real ID come into existence, and when we factor that in, it does take a substantially longer time to do Real ID transactions.
We have about 10 minutes left.
I'm sorry, Mr. Chairman.
You can wrap up, because I know that this bill will generate interest and questions, so we want to make sure the committee...
Allow me to conclude by saying that we think that the proposal that we have here is very fair and is certainly a basis that we cannot go backwards from. It is not something that is negotiable to go down from. It is a very fair and honest effort to say this is what we absolutely need at a minimum. And with that, Mr. Chairman, I will conclude and entertain any questions
you
may have.
Thank you. We have two questions already in the queue. Representative Hausman, Representative Petersburg, Representative Mason.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. To the establishment or establish that issuance of a duplicate title is an expedited transaction and carries an additional $20 fee. Are you saying that's a $20 increase over current?
Mr. Chairman?
Mr. Hurst.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Hausman. First of all, it's a $10, not a $20 expedited fee. There are currently some services that are subject to an expedited fee, in which case that does carry a $20 cost, that $10 is retained by the deputy, and the other $10 is submitted to the state of Minnesota. In this case, it is limited to just the duplicate title printing on site by the deputy, in which case the deputy would charge the $10 fee for them. For their operation, there would be no additional $10 charge to the state, and yes, that would be on top of the filing fee that would be charged for a title service.
Representative Hausman.
And so added to the base, what would that be that you're now paying for a duplicate title?
Mr. Chairman and Representative Hausman, the duplicate title fee currently is $10 that the deputy charges. We are proposing that go up to $13.50. So it would be the $13.50 filing fee plus the $10 expedited fee to have that title printed and in the customer's hand as soon as they came in and walked out the door. The alternative,
can you just
and again,
give me a number?
Pardon me,
Hausman.
Can you just give me a number? Current fee plus this increase. What would a duplicate title cost?
Mr. Chairman and Representative Hausman, I can only speak to what the fee is from the deputy standpoint. Currently, if you walked in and wanted a duplicate title printed on site, it would be a $10 filing fee, and that would be it. Under this proposal, it would be $23.50 that the deputy registrar would retain. And the $10 expedited fee is reflective. It's an option, and it is only in those cases where the customer wants that title immediately. And currently, we do not, we cannot even cover the charge for the paper that we are charged by the state to supply this, nor do we cover the cost of actually printing it up, the toner costs and everything as well.
Sounds like doubling the fee, but it's a lot of words. I don't know. Sounds like more than doubling the fee.
Mr. Burris? Any clarity on, or Mr. Lee, on what is the percentage increase we're looking at in this bill in terms of the fee?
Mr. Chair and members, actually, I was just going to note that I think there might be an ambiguity as to what the intent is on the amount of fee that is intended to be set by this. The $10 is the amount retained under that section that's being cited. But the fee that would be set in general for an expedited service is $20. So I can work with the author, depending on movement on the bill, to clarify if the intent is to set a $10 fee.
And if I may, real briefly, Mr. Chairman, I did have this very discussion with the revisor's office because I was concerned of that ambiguity, and I said I want it to be just the $10, not to be considered as a $20. And I was assured that the way this was written that took care of that, but I will work
and
with you.
And members, just to manage the rest of this meeting, we have four more members with questions. I see a testifier now from the public. Is there anyone else that wants to testify on this bill? Okay. If it's okay with the committee, I think we're just going to have to extend till about 2:20. I really want to make sure that members' questions are answered, and then we can lay this bill over and proceed from there. So I would just, again, ask members to keep your questions short and the testifiers keep your answers brief. We have Representative Petersburg next.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And really what I want to do is just offer my support for this bill. I am disheartened that it does not appear that we're going to be able to get reimbursement back to the deputy registrars that's going to keep them whole for what they've done. Yet at the same time, we know that they are continually going backwards in its in their expenses versus what they're bringing in. And so I think this is one avenue in which we have to do something to allow the deputy registrars to stop, first of all, stop hemorrhaging with the funding they have, and then into the future to be able to recoup some of the losses that they have in which we're not going to be reimbursing them for. And Mr. Chair, I would also just give you an option here. Is I think this is important enough for us to move fast and forward that if you want more time, but I would highly recommend maybe going right to the general register rather than keeping it here and let it go as a standalone bill, but that certainly would be your call. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Always move on bills in various times, but to your point, we are going to hear on Thursday night Representative Hansen's bill. Maybe the third time will be the charm for deputy registrar reimbursement related to Minlar. So that bill is progressing in the Senate as well, and I think it's our intention to do that as a standalone. Representative Mason.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to get something clarified. I know that the deputy registrar's workload has been increased. My question is more to the agency, is if the workload is being done by the deputy registrars, shouldn't the money be coming from the agency rather than us having to increase fees? Or is it not true? Am I interpreting something here that is nobody in the agency's workload is being decreased? It's just a matter that the work done by the deputies is being increased.
I'm going to have Representative Elkins respond to that.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair, because I've spoken with a wide variety of stakeholders to this process, and my understanding is that, in part, the shifting of the workload to the deputy registrars, to the front office, is in part intentional. And as a an IT guy, a data guy, I would say that as a matter of best practice, any time you can push the data entry and the data validation to the front end of the process, so you don't have a process where the data is being entered and then somebody else is checking it again, that's actually a good thing. But I think Representative Mason raises a good point, is that when we are looking at the agency's budget, that we ought to very carefully, if that is in fact the intention, then there ought to be economies in the back office that we should be looking for when we consider the agency's budget.
Thank you. We have an actual deputy registrar. Did you want to make any quick comments?
I do. Thank you.
Your name for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Julie Hansen. I am the property and customer service manager for Scott County. I am a deputy registrar. I am technically here today to represent the Minnesota Association of County Officers. I did have some brief comments of support regarding that, but I will keep my comments very brief. The reason I sort of bulldozed my way up here, and I appreciate your recognition, I apologize for that, was to answer Representative Hausman's question directly regarding the fee. The current fee for a duplicate title for a customer walking into the office is $17.25. If you were to take into account both the filing fee increase as well as the expedited fee that the customer would be charged, the cost on that would now be $30.75. So,
very helpful.
Thank
very
you.
Helpful. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
So we have two more members on the list, and if anyone else wants to be recognized, please let me know. Representative Kosnick and Representative Tabke. So, Representative Kosnick.
Thank you, and I know we're a little short on time here, but I have no opposition to the bill. I was Real ID was mentioned, and over the course of some of these discussions was the amount of additional work as we try to get that system more up and running. Mm-hmm. And I was wondering if there's consideration to add in here some recognition of the additional work for the registrars in this bill, if that's forthcoming, or you're going to do a separate bill. But it seems like it'd be an opportune time to have that in here. I didn't really see it in there, but
that, I think
maybe to the author.
I think Mr. Hurst.
Almost more of a statement than.
Oh, okay.
Depending on our time, I know time is short. But I wanted to put that on the
record. It's a valid question with the Real ID coming up. Mr. Hurst, brief.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Kosnick, this bill also includes proposes a $4 filing fee increase for driver's license transactions, and that's to reflect the extra workload for Real ID transactions.
Okay, thank you. Representative Tabke, I believe, is the last member on the list.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Hopefully this is a quick one, but just have a quick question. As I look through the governor's bill, Representative Elkins, a lot of this was included in the governor's bill. Have you had a chance to compare the two of them to see how similar these numbers are to that, and if we're looking at the same thing between the two of them?
I have not yet.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Members, are there any additional questions of the author, any of the testifiers on House File 1008? Okay, Representative Mason.
I guess I'm still not sure about I didn't get my clarification. Is the agency decreasing their workload? And if they are, why are we shouldn't the money be coming from that end rather than raising the money from consumers?
Is that directed at any of the author or either of the testifiers, Representative Mason?
Mr. Chair, I'll take a stab at it.
Okay, Representative Elkins, why don't you answer that?
Historically, the deputy registrars have been entirely dependent on the fees for the revenues.
Representative Mason?
Okay, as I said, the deal is I know the deputies have additional responsibilities.
Mm-hmm. We're extending the hearing a few minutes, Representative Torkelson.
This work was done in-house or by the agency people before, that means either somebody's workload is being decreased and shouldn't that money be allocated first before we raise additional funds?
Response from the author.
We can talk about some other time.
Well, no, we're extending the hearing 5 minutes, so yeah. That's enough time to get your question answered and to have Representative Torkelson ask his. Any comments from the author or testifiers on
Chair, what I would answer is that I think, again, the registrars are accustomed, it's traditional for them to be entirely fee-based, but I do think that when we consider the agency's budget, we should be looking for cost-effectiveness efficiencies in the back room that we would expect from the shift in the workload.
Thank you. Is that any further questions, Representative Mason? Okay. Representative Torkelson.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate the comments of both Representative Mason and Representative Elkins. I think that's an appropriate conversation that we should have. And just to add to the kind of current landscape, my understanding is that it is the intention of the chair in the other body across the street that the Deputy Registrar Compensation Bill that's being considered to be the only Deputy Registrar compensation bill to be considered, which I find interesting.
Well, we're considering this one on this side of the street. We'll see what happens.
Well, yes, Mr. Chair, I understand that, but it will be the only one of the session if the chair on the other side of the street has his way.
Right. Okay. Yeah, we asked Mr. Howe to see. Informed me of that just a few minutes ago. So before we adjourn, any final comments? Thank you very much for your testimony. And again, whenever you're here or there's any deputy registrars here, thank you for your work. We understand the circumstances you're under, and I think this is a very important bill, and that's why we're laying it over, and I think we'll be considered in their omnibus bill. So thank you very much. So, members, just a couple of announcements before we break. Representative Elkins's bill, autonomous vehicle bill, we're going to hear on Thursday evening, and as well as Representative Schultz's bill. Those were originally scheduled for today. They've both agreed to come back Thursday, so we don't have to come back tonight. And just a heads up that, again, we want to keep people's Fridays open. So we want to we expect a pretty long day Thursday here. We're going to take up the governor's bill and really take the entire committee time on Thursday for the afternoon with that bill. And then we'll do our remaining bills that are in the committee on Thursday night. And we do not plan to meet as a committee next week. Because we are going to free up the staff to put together our omnibus bill. So we're going to try to take the remaining bills we'd like to consider hearings on tomorrow night. So that's why Thursday night. That's why we have a potentially long night Thursday, but then you'll have the week off from this committee at least the following week. Does that sound good, Representative Ferguson?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, for considering our scheduling issues. I really do appreciate your accommodations.
And the other thing is there's no major NCAA games that we have to worry about because the University of Minnesota is playing Thursday morning and the University of Cincinnati is playing Friday morning. So no problems there. Representative Hausman.
Mr. Chair, I looked ahead already to the Thursday floor session, and we have a really quite a significant number of bills up on the floor on Thursday. I don't know if you'd looked ahead
for that. We will look ahead and try to make some needed adjustments if necessary. But thank you for that heads up. This is the voice of experience, members. With that, we're adjourned.